Hi, welcome back. This is Dr. Jen Kennedy, and in this episode, I talk through the dual control model, which is basically looking at your exciters and your inhibitors, what turns you on, what turns you off, and really trying to make a very solid list about what those look like in all different categories, and not just exactly sexually, but like in the larger picture. So tune in and hopefully we can help you get some more insight about this because it affects how willing and how interested and how aroused you are. So tune in and yeah, hopefully it'll help you with your sex life. Hi, welcome back. It's Dr. Jen Kennedy. In today's episode, I am going to talk about turn-ons and turn-offs. So, just to sort of frame this conversation, I want to start out by defining the dual control model, which the Kinsey Institute define as postulates that sexual arousal and associated behaviors depend on the balance between sexual excitation and inhibition. Okay, so let's break that down. Basically, it means that there are two things happening at any one time, and you cannot just look at what turns you on. You also have to consider what is turning you off. Because what I see over and over again with couples is that the offs are very loud. Like, people can really easily identify what they don't like, what they don't want, what doesn't work. But if those things aren't addressed, even if there's lots of the things they really like going on, it's very hard to hear. It's very hard to give into that. It's very hard to turn toward it. I find, especially for women, that we have to look at both items. And that's the excitation, meaning things that excite you, things that really make you more interested, that perk you up, that make you feel playful and curious and open and interested in that sexual playful place. Those things are there, yes, but there's also the inhibitors. So inhibitors can be a function of safety, they can be a function of just gross out, they can be a function of fear of abandonment or fear of embarrassment or lots of things, right? Some of them are just preferences and some of them are also based on historical experiences that have been negative. So that is what we're going to unpack today. So let's start with the inhibitors because I feel like that cannot be ignored and it is sort of ever present for most of us. So inhibitors can be a whole range of things. Like, I'm thinking of some clients I sat with recently, and they were talking about really like basic things like bad breath, or if there's been kind of a negative mood from one of them, or if they're feeling tired, like some of those really basic things, then it's likely to be this kind of overlay, this frame that's hard to get away from. So I'm going to ask you to start, actually, even pull out a piece of paper, ideally, and start to write some of these things down because they're so personal. They're not the same for everybody. I mean, nobody likes bad breath, but most of these things in this category are really personal. So I love the way that the Come As You Are author Emily Nagoski frames this. She talks about sexy contexts and not so sexy contexts. And I start with sort of her framing, and then I usually expand it in my couple sessions because people immediately can usually come up with a couple things they dislike, but it's hard to actually really get the nuance that's going to be important. So if we look at the list of things that, let's start with your senses. Like, bad breath would be a smell thing. Right. So what other things do you really dislike in the smell department? You know, and maybe that's body odor. What else? I don't know. Are there certain things that are like no go for you? And maybe that's even there's some gross out factors around like body fluids or that kind of thing. But This is going to be really important for you to be honest with yourself about, because some of this stuff you can address, and some of it is going to have to be addressed relationally, in which case you have to name it. So, starting with the senses and specifically smell, are there other things in that element that don't work for you? What about taste? So for some people on the negative with taste, they might they might not like it if their partner has a certain taste to them. And so taste can be what's in your mouth. It can also be, within your body fluids. So maybe you don't like a salty body. So maybe somebody needs to take a shower first. Or maybe you like it better when your partner has eaten more fruit, for example. So their body fluids might taste a little sweeter. But other things like that are kind of on the negative side of things. If you look at the senses, specifically sight. So, what kind of things do you like to see or not see? So, starting on kind of like separate to your partner, just you. What is in your world? Like, if your house is messy, that would be something you would see that would feel like, ugh, like for some people, that's very chaotic. It's hard for them to relax. It's hard for them to be in a calm space if things around them are messy, or and so that's also why they tend to like hotel rooms, actually, which are clean and tidy and not their responsibility. So what else? What about things you're hearing? So things you do or don't like hearing. In this case, we're on the inhibitions. So what things don't you like to hear? That might be certain types of music, that might be certain types of dirty talk. That might be a background television. Some people really like to hear porn in the background, and some people are like, heck no, like that's terrible. I don't want that. So just kind of looking at some of those pieces first. And then what about your general mood state? Your physical body. Like sometimes we have like physical limitations, like you have aches and pains. Like say you're having a lot of back pain, or you've got a massive headache going, you're probably not that interested. But what are things that systematically like happen in your particular life and relationship that would be negatives? Because any of those things are going to be important to know so that you can name. So if there's physical limitations or physical preferences, or mood might be, when you're stressed out, that's usually a big fat inhibitor. Right? Like if things are going, really busy and stressful at work, it's hard sometimes. Some people like to shift into a sexual space and it feels like a release. Other people, women in particular, tend to say, no, thank you. Like I'm stressed out. I've got too many demands on me. I can't shift into that erotic space. So stress is a big one. She mentions distraction. Right. So if you're distracted with work, if you're distracted with whatever, maybe your kids are, having drama at school, or maybe you've got a whole bunch of things that you've got going on that are in your mind that haven't been done. How can you address? Because first of all, it's identifying what these things are, and then it's a matter of like, how do we address these things where possible? Right? You can't always immediately get rid of an ache or a pain. But sometimes you can. Sometimes you can take some Advil or do some stretching. Or if it's distractibility, maybe you make a list, or maybe you address some of that in advance so that you know that you can shift into a more playful erotic space later. So that's definitely something to consider. Another one that she mentions under this first category of mental and physical well-being is sexual functioning. This can go for both. Men and women, specifically, if you're worried that you're not going to respond, if you're worried that you're taking too long, if you're worried for guys that they might not be able to have an erection, that can really psych you out. It can make you avoidant because it's embarrassing and it's frustrating and it can be a real inhibitor. So, in that case, do you need to take your medicine in advance? Or Do you need to have a conversation with your partner about what is plan B? What else can you do if that particular thing isn't possible? Because I'm a firm believer that there's lots of other things that can be really satisfying that don't require penetrative sex. But I feel like a lot of couples do that as their default. And so if that's your default and that's all you've got and that's not working, then it's all off the table and that becomes a real disappointment. So if you're worrying about physical functioning, that probably needs to be addressed, either medically or interpersonally, with your partner. Other things that can be turn-offs. And a good way, like Nagoski suggests, that you think back to a previous, exchange either with your current partner or a previous partner that didn't go so well. And that's some of where you're farming this from. Like, was there something in particular that you really disliked about this whole thing? And what was it about? Like how it all played out. So that might be also where you're getting some of this idea. So next she talks about physical appearance. And that could be your physical appearance. It could be about your partner's. So that might be you feel more inhibited when you don't feel attractive, right? And that might be you don't feel attractive because you haven't showered, or you don't feel attractive because of your body shape or size or whatever it is. But there's like a limit on that. That one's a harder one to change depending on what the conversation is. But for example, if you really like your partner clean shaven, that would be something that could be communicated. Right? If you're like, oh, I hate it. I hate the stubble. It hurts. I don't want that. Then that would be something that could be, that could be requested, I guess. So that would go into, it would go into the negative, or it would go into a request in the more exciter side of things. Other things let's see, what else do we have? So relationship characteristics is the next category that Nagoski mentions, and that is a huge one. What's going on between you two? So are you communicating? How is the general energy? If it's been negative, if there's been a lot of sniping, or if there's just been disconnection, it might be harder. So recognizing what are your relational characteristics and how is that playing out? Is there a power dynamic going on? Do you feel overextended, or do you feel disregarded? Because that is going to matter. You're less likely to want to enter this space of vulnerability if you feel like there's a power imbalance and you're mad about it. So important that you can sort of do some self-reflection and understand where you are with that. So feeling desired is another one that comes up. It's often quite difficult to feel interested in sex if you don't feel desired by your partner. Like if you feel like they're just kind of going along with it. And sometimes that's the beginning, right? It's just sort of like this goodwill to come in and try to have some erotic space. But in the bigger picture, if you don't feel desired, if you don't feel that your partner is legitimately attracted to you or interested in you, that can really be hard. It can be hard to muster the energy to initiate or to participate. So I think that's definitely worth saying. So next category is setting. So where are you? Like I had mentioned before, maybe being in a hotel room, but I would also say, what else? Like some people, it's a real inhibitor for them to be in any sort of public place, right? Like they don't like PDA, they kind of push away affection, let alone sex. Now other people, for example, love to be in the Mile High Club. They're happy to, they even get arousal from having kind of interest and play in more public places, and they're open to like being really playful in more public spots. But maybe that's not your jam. Maybe you definitely don't like that. Or maybe, how do you feel about distance? So distance being, say, what you're in different locations, maybe your partner travels a lot for work, and that might be really hard to connect during that time. or not, right? Everything is what's your relationship look like in this? And so the setting does matter in terms of where are you located. And part of that might be like you're sick of having sex always in the bedroom at the same time, in the same way, in the same place. So your turnoff might be the monotony of the where. And in which case, if you like novelty, if then the novelty might dictate that you want to go somewhere different for that. Let's see, what else? We talked about stress. Yeah, so from here, I usually just actually kind of have clients do sort of like a word cloud almost of like, what are all the things that you like or dislike? I actually draw a line down the center of your paper and I do a plus and a minus, and the minus is the stuff I don't like. Me personally, I don't like this sexually to happen, or these are things, even like it doesn't even have to be super specific to sex. It can also be the general primers that take you into a space where you are more receptive to play, to even sexual play or to consider it, right? So you're going to even go a little bit wider about things that you know you don't like. And then now we're going to transition into the things you do like. Now, depending on your makeup, some people have a whole lot of things that they don't like. Right, that all these things get in the way, all these things are obstacles to desire for them, and it's a very high mark. They have very sensitive breaks, Nagoski would say. But what I find is that if we can address some of those things, if we know what they are and we can address them in a more daily, kind of day-to-day way, then it frees you up because a lot of times those people get painted as very rigid. And they aren't, they just need certain conditions to be met. And then they can shift over into this other place that's more playful. And they do have access to that. They just need some support in getting over to that space. So shifting gears and thinking about the plus side of your list, I would love it if you would cultivate this like and just keep adding to it as new things come up. These are going to be things that delight you. Now go into a wider space. Like if we looked at general resourcing, it's probably for many people when they're more rested, oftentimes when they're on vacation. I had mentioned hotel rooms, so maybe when they're in a beautiful place, whatever beautiful means to them. But also just think generally, like what are places that make you happy? So is that water-based places. So that might be an ocean, that might be a rafting trip, that might be a shower, that might be a hot tub, like water. Like I personally love water. So I just think of all the water places, right? I like to see the ocean. I don't necessarily like to go in it so much, but I like to see the ocean and I like to be in water. So that would be kind of a random example, but that might be true for you. So, what else in terms of environments, environmental cues that make you kind of just be in a very receptive, happier place? Do you really like nature? What kind of things in terms of environments make you happy? Maybe you like really beautiful architecture. So you prefer to like if you spent a day going to museums or going to, I don't know, interior design things or something. Maybe that would put you in a better place. So think about like just sort of what are the environments that make you like relaxed and curious and open. So that's a good kind of general place to start. And then start to get into a little more specific. So when do you feel your best self? When do you feel more inclined toward masturbation, for example? Like, when are you sort of in that mood where you're like, oh, this sounds like kind of a good idea, right? Like, when are you in touch with yourself and when are you more likely to be interested in your partner or a partner? That might be morning or evening or midday delight, like, right? It can be any time, but like time of day, even. And then go back to the sensory questions. So start with smell. Like, I love really good candles. And I like the clean scent of a nice candle. So that is a positive for me. But what about you? Like, do you like, lavender? Do you like what kind of smells make your brain happy, make your mind happy, really? So what kind of tastes? So it's not just about like, does your partner taste like X? It can also be, maybe it's a really nice glass of wine, or maybe it's a beautiful dinner, that you cook and you like all the smells and the as you're chopping and cooking a dinner for someone or with someone or watching someone do it for you. Like if that is a sensory part that really intrigues you and starts to make your brain delight, then that would go in your positive column. And what about things you see? Like, do you like porn? Porn is an obvious one, but what else do you like? I don't know. Do you like novelty? Do you like yourself to look a certain way? Do you like your partner to look a certain way? Like, is there a certain look that they have that goes, yes, that's what I like. I want them to do that. And it might even be like you love it when they wear this particular pair of glasses, or whatever. You like it when their car is really clean. Like, I don't know, right? Just think through the things. And this isn't like a demands list. This is like a wish list. So the more you can come up with on the positive, the better, because it's going to give you a huge treasure trove of things that are going to help cultivate interest and generally prime you to be in a better space, a more receptive space. So as you start to think about, as we kind of narrow in more to the sexual realm, think about past interactions that have been really positive and arousing for you, with your current partner or a past partner. So how did they touch you? What about it made it hot? Like, was there a banter that happened, or was there a power dynamic that felt really good for you? In terms of maybe they initiated and expressed desire towards you. How did they kiss you, or how did they touch you, or where did they touch you? Like, as you start to really think through kind of like what made that experience so good, maybe it was just the fact that you were up in the middle of the mountains and that was gorgeous, or maybe it was that you had this fantastic hike where you felt really connected. But maybe also it was because they knew your body, or they had really good skill in a certain way of touching you, in which case, try to break that down and go, what was that that I liked so much? Was it the approach? Was it the angle? Was it the actual touch? Was it the kissing? Like, what was it? Because the more you can start to say, I really like this. I like this done to me. I like it when you touch me, or you look at me, or you interact with me in this way. It can be really helpful. And then also, what do you like? What turns you on vis-a-vis your partner? So, do you like to approach a certain way, or do you like it when your partner does a certain thing that is identifiable? Because if you can articulate that, if you can really get specific, it can be so nice, because it's a little bit of a roadmap to you for them, and for yourself. Because I will tell you, knowing this stuff, like it's kind of like obvious, because it's a given in our mind that we do or don't like these things, and yet a lot of them we kind of forget, and so we don't put them into place, and it makes it harder for us to get into that space. So if we know that these things exist and we are paying attention to them and employing them more regularly, then it's a really nice roadmap, like I said, for both of us. And I would also argue that so much of successful sexual interaction is about us knowing how to turn ourselves on. So, for example, if you know that you love candles, that'd be me. If you know that you like certain kinds of music, you can put that on If you know that you like sex at a certain time of day, you could initiate then, or maybe arrange for a date, at that time. If you know that you need some, like, also, I will see that sometimes couples, like, one person is more of a planner and one person really likes spontaneity. That's okay. So then I would say in that grouping, the planner can plan and the other person doesn't have to know. And so it feels like a surprise to the other person, right? To the spontaneous loving person. And so if you know that you need certain criteria to be met in order to shift into this place, then you're the planner and you need to do that for yourself. Now, if you're both in that camp, then, planning a date night is probably a good idea. And then that way it signals and it lets you both start to put some things into place toward the expectation that there's going to be quality time together, that you're going to be kind of safeguarding that time to have it be quality between the two of you, and that maybe you've eliminated some of those barriers in advance. Because otherwise it's really hard to just, initially when you're dating, it's not hard. You just push everything else away and all you care about is that. But in a longer term relationship, that doesn't really come as easily. And so you're going to probably need to refer to this list and look at it and see, what do I like? What do I know? What do I know about what my partner likes? How can I do some of these things to signal that I'm paying attention, that I care, that I want this experience to happen for us? Because I swear, so much of the mind, like, it's like that piece of just this slow level signaling of like, oh, I'm here. I want this. I want you. You matter. I'm turned on by you. Or I'm willing to do some of these things that you've signaled are important. And that makes me feel cared for. That makes me feel like I matter. And so this experience is much likelier. It's much more likely to happen and move forward in a positive way if some of these elements are at play. So as you start to make your list and as you think about the dual control model back to where we started, recognize that even if you have a whole bunch of positive things, a whole bunch of exciters, things that really turn you on, if you also have the inhibitors and those are actively happening, you're not likely to overcome the inhibitors in order to get to the exciters. Like, you're not likely to move forward. You really do have to address the things that inhibit you, the obstacles first, in order to get to the other side. Now, the other piece of this is that some people have really sensitive exciters. They can drop into that erotic space quite easily. They know how to prime themselves, and those partners are fun and easy to like be with, and they tap into their own erotic space well. And so that can be a really fun partner. It can also feel like a lot of pressure if you're not like that. If you can't get into that space as easily and you've got all these like, but I need this first, And so it's like it's interesting because I find that people are not always the same. They don't show up the same in sexual exchanges with different partners. Partners bring out different parts of us. And sometimes if a partner is really easygoing and really quickly able to tap into that erotic side, sometimes it can actually be overwhelming for a partner. It can feel like, ah, I can't get there, and so it creates pressure. Just like on the flip side, if somebody has a lot of brakes, if they have a lot of inhibitors and they're very sensitive and hesitant, that can feel like a mountain sometimes. So if you're willing to do this exercise with your partner, I think it can be incredibly helpful. And just, it could be a fun thing. It's nobody's feelings hopefully are getting hurt, but it's like, let me just tell you some of the things that I like and that I don't like. And then you've got that information and it might be a good place to try to move forward because, for many women in particular, they aren't interested in sex unless they've got some of this relational thing happening. And if they feel frustrated or dismissed or disconnected, more importantly, disconnected, I would say, in the everyday, they're not likely to shift into this space. And so that gets reflected in some of their inhibitors. And I think if that gets named overtly and that language can start to be used, then it's like, oh, okay, this is how we move into that space. This is how we care for the relationship, and then we care for each other, and then we want to be connected, and that includes sexually. So I would love for you to try this, and I welcome your feedback. How did it go? What did you learn from it? And did you put it into practice? So these are the kind of things we talk about when I do the pleasure circle in a more specific way. But I think it's really important because it sometimes feels like an overwhelming thing of like, how are we ever going to get there? And it's like, if we can actually talk through, and some of our things are maybe embarrassing or they feel persnickety or whatever, but if you can actually name them, then you can address them, right? You can honor them, or you can dismantle them, or whatever. But if you don't name them, if you're not consciously aware that this thing is icking you out, or this thing is actually really turning you on, but you're afraid to say it, you know what I mean? Like, I think you need to actually own it. Because if you can own it, then you are much more likely to get it to work in a way that works for both of you, or for you if it's just you by yourself. But I think it's important for you to know, even if you're single, what are these things? Because they're going to come into play if you want to shift into this place. So I would love your feedback, and I welcome questions, and I wish you the best as you make your lists of inhibitors and exciters. Okay, take care.